on the 17th, yeah, right.
Test, test. This is Dave Crippen of the Edison Institute, and we are in Tucson, Arizona, and it is April 15th on a lovely sunny day at the Tucson National Country Club, Golf Club, where we are talking today with Mr. George W. Walker, a well-known industrial and automotive designer who is remarkably good shape and fettle after all these years. And we look forward to hearing a career story that probably has no parallel. Mr. Walker will tell his story of his career in industrial design from his earliest influences.
Thank you, Dave, and I'll try to say as the chips fall. I don't remember way back that far, but when I was even mentioned about what happened in grammar school, whether I did any style, and then you know, kind of style you do, you make draw pictures of Mutt and Jeff. It's that time; it's very prominent, and
that was a popular comic strip.
That was one of the things that even Bob Hope, which his brother and I were schoolmates, and Bob was just a little youngster then, mm-hmm. and he, Freddie Hope used to bring him to school with him. But they always wanted I would do this Mutt and Jeff act for him, which I would copy, and I got pretty good at that, just doing that work. But it just seemed implemented the further along of the styling and design that you automatically do, because it's like playing a piano. The more you play it, the more you accomplish. And that is also all my life has done the same thing, that practice, practice, practice. I never practiced on the violin or piano, but I have in my hands. It goes through, your creativity goes through one arm out the other, and that's just what it is. And then, as I say, it's like playing piano. And, but that is the story about how you start. But that kept going until I went down to industrial school in Cleveland. And then they implemented myself a little bit more into the drawing stages. It was a good school just to learn the preliminaries of styling, mm-hmm. design. And then later on, I went to Otis Art Institute in Los Angeles, and got a pretty good education of drawing and anatomy. Anatomy was very important in my way of thinking. If you didn't have anatomy, you couldn't draw figures. And of course, figures to me were very simple after I learned to draw them. And while I was in school there in Los Angeles, Bullock's Company was a very large store.
B-U-L-L-O-C-K-S.
Yeah, that's right. And then I got a job doing some work on Saturdays for them.
What year was that?
1920. And started several of my drawings were put into Vogue Harper and Vogue and Harper at that time.
Really?
Yes.
And these advertising sketches?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they were a story on how a student can really get along in that kind of business, art business. Well, that was very good because it really was my starting point into styling. And then the more I did, the better I became. I guess that's all you can say. Mm-hmm. And it's just continually practice, practice, practice. So then I got back into Cleveland, Ohio, and then I did all the stores there in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Hallie's, Baker's, Amar Yeager's, and a whole group of them. I did all the products. And I was an individual and a different type of a guy than some of the people who were doing that kind of work, I got known very well. And I was quite athletic at the time, and I got a lot of publicity to my work as a stylist, designer, and artist for women's wear.
Forgive me, this is remarkable that had you, what do you attribute this, your own aggressiveness, your own, you've come far in a short time?
It's hard to say just what it is. Automatically you grow into it, that's mm-hmm. what I like to say. And the more you do, the better you become. So I think that's what helped me. And
you were freelancing then in Cleveland, you weren't with an agency?
No, not that time. first I got a job at Powers House, an advertising agency. Uh-huh. And then I stayed there for a short time and went over to Premier Press. A neighbor put in through a lot of press work.
In those days, printers did a lot of advertising work.
Yes, they did. Yeah. And they were doing the same kind of work that a lot of agencies were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had the accounts. They had three big accounts. And
this is Premier Press.
Premier Press. Mm-hmm. And they were all in the style program. Dresses, coats.
Right.
And so I had a very good in on how to do them. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of work. Then they came along and I thought I was pretty good. I was going for myself. I had a lot of good entrees, and the people that we did the work for wanted to know who was doing the type of work that they were paying for. So I automatically got in to do their work as a consultant, mm-hmm. and the outside freelance is what it was. And I had my offices in Carnegie Hall on 14th and Euclid, and it was very well known.
What was the name of the firm?
George W. Walker.
Right.
And
you call George W. Walker Illustrated, do I recall?
Yes.
Right.
So I guess that's about the story about the claim. Then I had a lot of work that I'd been doing for sketching,
mm-hmm.
and showing, and they were showing it in papers, newspapers, and so we got a lot of good ink. And the Peerless president, Mr. Bohannon.
Peerless was?
Peerless Motor Car Company.
Ah.
Said yes. One day.
Where are they located then?
They were on 93rd in Euclid, or 93rd in Carnegie, I think it was.
In Cleveland.
Right. So he wanted to know who was doing this work that was advertised so well in Cleveland.
What was his name again?
Bohannon.
B-O-H-A-N-A-N,
I think it was.
Right. What was his first name?
Just Bohannon, I can't remember his first name.
And he was president of Peerless?
Yeah, Peerless.
Okay.
And he'd like to know who was doing that work, so somebody told him. He said, well, I'd like to have him do some of our work. But that time, Peerless was going downhill so badly, and they had no money, and that was in 1928. 28? Yeah, 28. So but I did the work for him.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it was for free.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, well, why don't you go over to Baker Raw Lang Company? Now, Baker Raw Lang was a body company. And
Baker dash R-O-U-L-A-N-G.
Yeah, that's
right. They were in Cleveland.
Yeah, they were in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
So
they were
a
body firm?
Yes.
Right.
So I got in with the Baker Raw Lang Company, and they stayed there 8 months. And Amos Northrop was quite a designer for a Murray Body Company in Cleveland. Amos Northrop. And he was down one day to research some body companies down in Cleveland. And so he saw my work, and he said, you should be up in Detroit. You shouldn't be down here.
Uh-huh.
So I said, well, sometime I'll go up there. And in May 1st, I think it was, 1929, I took all my drawings and under my arm, and I said, well, I'm going to try it. And I thought I was pretty hot, but I found out I wasn't. But anyhow,
you went to Detroit.
Went to Detroit, then got to show some of my wares to Harley Earl.
Did you contact him? Earl the first one you contacted?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, his first one was his right hand man.
Who was that? Jewett?
No.
No.
I'll think of it in a minute. John Jarda was the second man. John Jarda.
Was he really?
To Jarda, yep.
T-J-A-A-R-D-Y-A.
John Jarda.
And he worked for. No, he
was a body man with Harley.
And they were in the what was then just established, the color and trim department.
The
art and color department.
The art and color.
General Motors. Yep. Yes. Right.
And they were on the other side of General Motors. They weren't right in the building, General Motors, at that time. So he said, "Well, they would like to hire you." And so I said, "Well, fine. I'll first of May, I'll go to work."
Mm-hmm.
Then Joe Graham. Of Graham Page.
Oh, yes.
We were a nice little doing one day, and we were drawing and sketching, and I always had a knack of drawing on some tablecloths, which probably was very rude, but I did. And so we were drawing one day, and he says, "Hey," he said, "why don't you come over to our place?" He said, and we'd like to talk to you. And you're with GM now, he said, but I said, "I'd be very fine. I think I'd like to." So I went over there, and it's Graham Page, and I got on with Graham Page.
What had happened at GM? You weren't too happy there?
Well, I felt it was bigger than too big. today.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And I didn't know whether I was going to succeed in a big company like that.
You needed
that.
A smaller area.
Yeah. So,
now, where was Graham Page?
They were around Warren.
Warren?
Yeah. And so I got in with Joe Graham and the Graham boys mm-hmm. very well. Mm-hmm. Knew them very well. And but each time that I got in with these people, I had an act of hoping I could get farther ahead.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And I did.
Uh-huh.
By salesmanship, maybe you can say that was it. I tried my best to do it.
Self-confidence.
Yeah.
What were your duties with Graham Page?
Styling, automatronic. Well, the first one I did was work with Amos North, the guy that insisted on me coming up there.
Northrop.
Uh-huh. He was then working with Graham Page and that uh-huh. body company, Murray Body Company.
Oh, I see. And Murray was Page's body
yes,
company.
Yes, right at that time. Mm-hmm. So I helped him on his first Blue Streak car.
The Blue Streak?
Yeah.
Graham Page.
Mm-hmm. Then there was
in 1929?
That in 29, latter part of 29.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, the bottom fell out of the world.
Oh, yes.
And so I was out of a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, if I'm going to be out of a job, it's going to be hard for me to catch one. So I'm going to take my drawings and see what I can do. So I wrapped at every door, big door industry, and got on. First of all, I got Dura Company.
Now, how do you spell that?
D-U-R-A. Dura.
Uh-huh.
And
what were they?
Hardware. Automobile hardware.
Okay.
That gave me a chance to go to the companies and help them style hardware.
Right. This would be exterior and interior.
Exterior and interior.
Right.
And at that time there were.
Excuse me. What do you mean by hardware?
Well, it's wind up your window. The,
right.
Instead of electric, we're uh-huh. doing to a lot of our cars now.
Right.
They had a little crank.
Right. I remember. It yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, but they had a little turn button. But I started out with big, long, thin. Same amount of material,
uh-huh.
and it's easy, just as easy to make it as the small,
uh-huh.
and it made a very good effect under the drawings.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So I'll come to another thing on that one
yes.
just in a minute, and so then I got Dura Company. Then I got four different companies on. I'm trying to think what they were now. A paint company.
A paint company.
Jones Dabney Paint Company.
Jones Dabney
Paint. And that was to tell the public, tell the automobile people what kind of colors to use.
Right.
Whether they were good or not, I told them and made them sketches how to do it.
The use of multiple colors are just coming into vogue that about
were,
this time.
That's right.
Yeah.
Black was a great
right.
color.
Mm-hmm,
for
yeah.
And we were just trying to get everybody away from black. We didn't do it, of course. You know that right. General Motors on the first to really take a small car like a Chevrolet
mm-hmm.
and tell the public that they can have any color they want, but not like Ford said he can have any color you want as long as it's black.
Right.
So that kind of helped us along quite a bit.
You think it was Mr. Earle's influence on that?
Well, a lot of it must have been.
Yes.
Yes, sure, there's no doubt about it, because the Fisher Brothers, which I became very, very well acquainted with for years after that.
Did you?
And yes, they in turn, had a lot of faith in Harvey because
uh-huh.
he was a great salesman, great guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was just a Donalds type of guy,
mm-hmm.
7 foot nearly,
yeah.
Pole baller, and knew all the good looking women and the people in town.
Mm-hmm.
Very popular.
Mm-hmm.
So Harvey Earl's name is very good.
Also very contentious, I think.
Yes, he was. Yes. And so that I started meeting people mm-hmm. around Detroit and the right kind of people.
Well, you had the automobile hardware and the paint and the automobile
yes.
paint company. What else did you
have? And then I had, in Cleveland, I had a company that made the shock absorbers.
Oh, yes. And not Houdai.
No, not Houdai.
No.
Just slips my mind.
That's all right.
But anyhow,
long
yeah, a long time ago. But they started going out of business then. Now, it seems funny that every time I took somebody, they were going out of business. But it wasn't so. But yeah. it was just a matter of timing and
yeah.
the timing of the. Because I look back to that very, very well to see that.
But this is where you were getting your groundwork. Your
yes,
training, so
yes. And I met each time I met somebody, all the engineers, top engineers at that time.
Uh-huh.
And the engineers had a feeling that stylists were crawling in on their work. So they weren't too popular. We weren't too popular with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to the point where I got in sight of them, where the other designers didn't.
Oh, good.
And talked their language
uh-huh.
and talk style, they talk football, talk baseball, talk everything. That type of thing that they would like to hear, but not a sissy type of a thing.
No.
So,
I guess you had earlier on some athletic experience.
Yes, I did. Yes.
Playing football.
Yes, I did. I was all state high school ball. And then years ago, after that, I got on with Cannon, Jim Thorpe.
That's what I read. Yeah. And you're playing with the Goodyear semi-pro.
Yeah, that was out in California.
I see.
I played with Goodyear there. Mm-hmm. And got in with Canton down to Canton.
Canton Bulldogs.
Oh, and,
right.
So I played a few games with them, but I got to know people, and they featured me to a certain extent because it was different.
Mm-hmm.
They said, "Here's a designer mm-hmm. playing football."
That's marvelous. Yeah.
And of course, I was afraid of hurting my hands, but I did. Mm-hmm. And getting back again to the.
Working with the body engineers.
Yes, body engineers.
Yes.
But I did a lot of work for Ford, not as their Ford company, but as the suppliers.
Really?
Yes. For the then the hardware company, which mm-hmm. Dura company was.
Dura. Mm-hmm.
And I went to Joe Gallam. He was then the chief engineer for
right.
Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember him?
We have his memoirs.
Uh huh. And Joe said. What do you do? And I said, well, I'm showing the hardware to the management, to you, and this is my type of hardware. He said, oh, that's too thin. Mr. Ford would never like that. I said, well, I want to show it. He said, well, we can't, I'm supposed to tell put the best thing he wants to see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I said, please, he said, put it on this table. Mm-hmm. I think Fortune or Fortune of Time, they mentioned that.
Yeah, they mentioned that.
So,
yes.
On this table, I said, no, I'll put a black cloth over this. He said, oh, you can't do that. Mr. Ford doesn't like that. I said, well, Mr. Ford isn't doing this. I am. And he said, well, you shouldn't have an attitude like that. You don't know Mr. Ford. I said, no, I don't care either.
Good for you.
That was why I did everything. Everything I was doing, that wasn't showing off. It was just I wasn't letting anybody step on me at any time that didn't know my business.
Good.
I knew what I was doing. So,
Joe was kind of cantankerous. So
yes, he was. Yes, he was. And later, I got to know him very well. He was very nice. Mm-hmm. But
was this at the engineering lab?
Yeah, the engineering lab.
Right. Okay.
On
Oakwood.
So I sneaked. He told me that I couldn't be in there when Mr. Ford passed by.
Oh.
But he went down all this row of hardware out there, and he just said, "That's it. According to mine."
That's marvelous.
And Joe said afterwards, "I can't understand it. He hates that stuff." I said, "Well, he doesn't hate it. It was inherently he loves it." He doesn't bring it out because he's too inventive.
What specific quality about your product do you think that attracted him?
Inherently everybody has style feeling.
Right.
Even though how tough they could be and how tough they are,
mm-hmm.
they still have.
Mm-hmm.
A guy can wear Gucci shoes.
Mm-hmm.
He won't acknowledge them.
Right.
But he wears them because he likes them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same way that he does everything else. The engineers of that time were all the blue collar guy and tough.
Yeah,
tough.
Right. Like Joe.
Yeah, just like Joe.
Yeah.
But we got into them very, very well. The same thing, and having the hardware I can't remember the name of the place now. But anyhow, McPherson at that time was his chief engineer.
At GM? Earl McPherson?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's when I first met Earl.
Really?
He said at the same time you can't go in and make this hardware because he said it would cost too much money. I said, well, if everything's on the same level,
uh-huh.
it isn't too much money, is it? He said, no. Well, I said it's on the same level, and it would prove it to you.
Uh-huh.
So I was just a salesman,
mm-hmm.
and for the design of this hardware, and I'm trying to get them to.
You're still with Dura at this time?
I'm still with Dura.
And you don't remember the company that McPherson was with?
I don't know. I think it was.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Was it in Detroit?
Yes, in Detroit.
Automotive supplier?
Yes. He was an automobile company. Made cars.
Oh, I see.
Raymond Loy was the first to design a car for them.
Studebaker?
And no one's Studebaker.
Hmm.
Oh, and that's something. Well, anyhow.
Well, I'll come to you.
There you go. So that's when I first met McPherson.
Mm-hmm. What kind of guy was he?
Antagonistic.
Was he?
Didn't like
people telling him what to do.
Well, and I was only a consultant. Then Ford, when I was a consultant for Ford, he came over and took the place of Youngren. Youngren at that time was chief engineer.
Yes,
and
yes.
Again, the kind of a guy that was against all stylists and designers.
Oh, dear.
Very bad.
Yeah. It was the mid-40s. Yeah.
Yes.
But and you're then, still back in 29.
Yeah, I would get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, right.
Well, anyhow, I opened my offices in the New Center Building, and
what was the
industrial
firm
design.
George industrial, W. Walker industrial design.
And so.
So you're right next to GM, aren't you?
Yeah, very close.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, one of the funny things happened. I was right across from the Fisher Building, and then the top floor of the Fisher Building was the Recess Club.
Oh, yes.
And one of the vendors took me up there for lunch, and I said, well, this is certainly fine. He said, well, this is a great club. He says, you're meeting every top man in the industry. And it was. Mm-hmm. All the GM people ate there, and every, no Ford people, very few. Mm-hmm. But I said, well, it'd be something if I ever joined this. I'd love to. I'm right across the way.
Mm-hmm.
I became president of it in 1929.
Really? That's marvelous.
1949.
Oh, 49. Okay, fine.
I became president of it. And that's where I had a lot of meetings of time with Hardy and Earl, because he was trying to get people in the Recess Club, and they had to go through me at the time. Mm-hmm. So we were very closely associated.
Oh, that's great.
And the association again just sort of revolved into an action of not trying to do it, not trying to sell, but automatically selling.
Mm-hmm, right.
I keep talking about salesmanship and styling, but that is it.
Very
few people in the styling business realize that, how important
salesmanship
is.
Yes.
And, that's a long story.
No, that's good. We'll get to your theory on that.
So after all, that was 19...
So you opened your own firm at the New Center Building in 19...
Wait a minute, 1934.
Okay, now you've been with Dura
then I had Jones Dabney. I had the shock absorber people that was made trunks,
mm-hmm.
and did all their work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll draw you a picture of that.
Okay.
Yeah. I have to do to draw to do.
Well, that's good. As far as the depression went, did it affect the how badly did it affect the supply,
well,
supply industry?
Very badly. Mm-hmm. See, that's why they Helen Dryden was a great artist of New York. She was interior.
Dryden.
Yes, she was an interiorist, and did a lot of good interiors. Dura was paying her $35,000 a year, and that was a lot of money for Dura Company. And then when the cut down came with everybody being fired, she was let out.
Oh.
That's when I went in and said, I'll do it for $200 a month.
Uh-huh.
I did.
It
was rock bottom. So I got 12 companies at $200 a month in 1 year.
Marvelous.
In 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
But there was, you had to work like the devil to do what you were supposed to do.
You can imagine. A lot of deadlines.
Yeah, but it started me going.
Mm-hmm,
that's
good.
What it.
Yeah, and that's where you achieved your early reputation.
Well, it worked out that way, I guess. Well, let's put it that way. So, then one day we had got the Waltham account for watches.
Waltham.
Yeah,
right.
They did most all Ford watches, clocks.
And clocks. Yeah. Oh, I see. And clocks were just coming into vogue in those days.
Yes, and Dumain was the president of Waltham and a very, very close friend of Henry Ford, the old man.
Doumaine?
I don't remember.
Something like that, yeah, right.
But, so they were very close friends.
Really? Uh-huh.
But that had nothing to do with me.
Okay.
But that, anyhow. But I used to go down there quite a bit, and they'd always tell me how Mr. Ford would run up those stairs long. Mr. Dumain was about 90, and Mr. Ford was close by, and those two old men would race up that stair.
Where was this?
In Waltham,
Massachusetts. Okay, the headquarters.
Yeah.
Of the
We had the Waltham account. I got stuck, and I was detail work, and I was not very good in detail.
Mm-hmm.
So a young man came at the door, my office, the New Center Building, and said he wanted a job.
Mm-hmm.
He showed me his work, and I said, "Well, here's one thing I'd do. I have these watches. I want you to take these watches and make a couple of clocks out of them,
mm-hmm.
for bedside clocks."
Oh.
And he came back the next couple of days with an airbrush work. It was beautiful. That was Ted Ornus.
Oh, O-R-N-E-S.
Yeah, Ted Ornes.
Uh-huh.
And he then became, later, Vice President of International Harvester.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, and the war came along.
Well, no, you're moving too fast.
Yeah. So Ted Ornes had a job at GM.
Uh-huh.
He was only getting $75 a month.
Mm-hmm. What was he doing there?
In design. Apprentice design.
Oh, yes.
So he told me the story, and I said, well, I'll hire you for $75. He said, fine. He said, the same amount of money. I said, no, that's $75 a week. Because I was, Alec and I thought that would be just the thing to do.
Sure.
Because I could make money on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I did.
You needed a good detail.
Yeah, I needed a good detail. I needed it. It was very good.
Uh-huh.
And that was that. So from then on, a lot of the stuff Ted did helped me.
Mm-hmm.
Same as yours helped me. Elwood Engel helped me. They were all my stars.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the right man to pick the right man that I could just send out.
Uh-huh.
And do it.
That's good.
So
now in the mid-30s, you're doing fairly well. You're picking up.
Yeah, pretty good.
Picking
up
the accounts.
Yes.
What kind of industrial design accounts did you have, say?
Well, over 3,000 products of different ones, yes. Bread boxes, canister sets, bicycles, roller skates, interior, and then all interiors, plastics. I did a lot of plastic works. I'll show you when
yes.
we go outside all the plastic works we've done. And then it was just one thing right after another.
Do you remember a particular product that you that sticks in your memory? Do I remember hearing about the West Clock?
Very good.
Baby Ben?
Very good. That was ours. That was where Elwood implemented that one.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I went down to West Clock in Connecticut, and I guess it was Connecticut, sat at the table with all their top guys, mm-hmm. the advertising people. Elwood sat at one end, I sat at the other. And all the time we were talking, we were drawing.
Uh-huh.
And Elwood threw it down his bed, and he said, oh, how did you do that quick? He said, well, that's my business. And I took the same thing and threw it down there, and I had the same kind of a drawing. And they said, well, these pairs are good. That's what they said. So we got the account briefly.
The West Clock account.
Yeah, West Clock account. Then we did the New Haven Connect Clock Company. We did. We had at that time, we had to give it up, was the Waltham account, because you can't have two accounts
in a
conflict
yeah,
of interest.
Yeah.
But we were very careful. Sometimes we didn't get our tit and ring.
Lines crossed.
But not very often.
Uh-huh.
And but that then we started doing an awful lot of work during the beginning of the war. The beginning of the war came along, and we were a little bit worried.
Before you get into that,
yeah.
sir, if I may pull you back a bit, tell me a bit. Give us a sort of a capsulized version of a successful industrial design. Firm such as yours, the people you brought in, Elwood Engel, Mr. Ornes, yeah. And others. How did that happen? How did you find these people?
First of all, I'm just trying to think about Joe. Joe Ornes was the first one of the three. This was right after Ted Ornes came to my place, and Ted Ornes.
About the mid-30s?
Yes, the mid-30s.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said he had a friend from Cleveland,
okay.
that would be a very good man for us to get a hold of. That was Joe Ornes.
O-R-O-S.
So Joe came in one day, and we hired Joe. At that time, we were doing some work that Joe, that was a Nash account, then we had the Nash.
The Nash account.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And being that there's a lot of the stories went along, you probably heard
yes.
them about
no.
Nash.
Please tell me.
Well, we went to Milwaukee with him. Man that had a lot of influence with Mr. Nash.
Mm-hmm.
And that time, George Mason just took over Nash.
Right.
Do you remember him?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And just took over Nash, so, and Kelpinator.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wanted me to show them the hardware, what we're going to do. So that's
right.
what got in there.
I see.
And we rode from Milwaukee down in with by car down to Chicago.
Is this Joe Orris with you?
No.
No.
That was alone.
Just yourself.
And,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Mason said, George, why don't you ever come over and talk to us about styling?
Mm-hmm.
He said, I understand you're doing an awful lot of automobile work. Well, I...
And were you?
Not a lot of it.
But enough?
Enough.
To attract attention. To
publicity-wise,
right.
I think a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I said I would. I would like to do that, and I'll prepare a group of drawings and bring them over to him.
Mm-hmm.
This was on a hot day, hotter than the devil, And
NASH calculator was there on Detroit.
Then
right.
The offices of NASH were implemented right in the Covenator building.
Right, which the American Motors still uses.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So. He called one day and said, George, he said, I thought you were coming over here. He said, we have our board of directors. They're waiting for you.
Okay.
Well, we would like to see your sketches.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I told him before we had them, but I didn't bring them over.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So some of the silly things that happened in my life.
Uh-huh.
How, I don't know, I ever got by them. I said, all right. I went over to Fisherville and grabbed my car and all these drawings, started out over on Grand River.
Mm-hmm.
And a parade was going by, Barnum and Bailey.
Oh my gosh.
I pulled over to the curb and watched the parade for nearly an hour.
To the NASH Covenator building in Detroit.
Yeah, when I went up in the boardroom and they said, they're sitting around there, all the men were perspiring. I said, where have you been? That's been over an hour that we called you. He said, be right over. I said, well, I'll tell you, I saw a parade and I like to love parades and I pulled over and watched the parade. And Mr. Mason went like that. Mr. Nash, he smile and it was amusing to him.
Of course, well, the Barnum and Bailey circus parade.
There was a guy starving, so to speak, that's the way they put it, had guts enough to tell us, all these men around here, that he had a parade meant more than him, than the money, than the $75,000 we were paying him, going to pay him.
Mm-hmm.
They hadn't had the account yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got the account.
Mr. Nash was amused. Huh?
Yeah. But he turned out to be a very nice gentleman, Mr.
Good.
Nash.
Yeah.
Very good friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
And
this is Charles Nash.
Charlie Nash.
Yeah, right.
I came back from Europe one time and he didn't ever see me dressed with a dress coat on, a derby hat and gloves. Got off the plane and happened to be going down Lexington Avenue to the automobile show. And this old gentleman walked along and said, hello, George. And I said, how are you, Dad? I shook hands. He said, where are you bound for? He said, I'm going up the automobile show. He said, I can't get in yet. He said, even though that we have an exhibition there. And I couldn't think who he was. He knew me. So we went to the automobile show and he said, we can't get in until 10 o'clock. And I said, sure, we can. I went in and asked for the manager and I said, I got Mr. Nash with me. He said, oh yeah, bring him in. He said, how'd you do that? And I said, well, that's just ignorance, I think, maybe to me on my part. I said, I don't like to see a man like you, a gentleman like you with all that industrial power that you have.
Right.
I said, and what you're doing for the country, standing outside there in a cold day, I said, waiting for you to get into it. Well, he said, you shouldn't do things like that. Well, anyhow, we did.
Well, you presented your sketches to the board. What they think of them?
Fine. They just thought they didn't make any of it, but they didn't have any money.
Mm-hmm.
But Wahlberg was chief engineer, and Wahlberg and I got very close together.
W-A-L-B-E-R-G?
W-A-H.
W-A-H-L.
Wahlberg.
B-U-R-G.
That's right.
Right.
And so we got very closely associated.
Mm-hmm.
And
which seems to have been your technique to find out who the decision makers were. And
that's right. And we got to
know
where we started. We had to start with the thank you, Anna. We had to start with the lower part of the engineers at first. Then we got up to the better engineers through a series of ways of doing, like in getting football tickets and inviting their wives to the football game.
Right.
And the other guys didn't do that. The stylists were afraid, and so many of them. There were a few that weren't, like Bill Schmidt. He wasn't afraid of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a few of them, like Harvey Earl, of course. Harvey was a fixer.
He wasn't afraid of anybody.
He was a fixer, no. He was a fixer. So, I mean, I guess I'm talking way ahead of myself here. That would even run out of tape. So many things like that happened.
Well, that's good.
And
so what were you going to do for Nash? What did they ask you to do?
Well, first of all, we had a hardware problem, and that was down my alley.
Perfect.
Yeah.
You still had your contact with Dura?
Yes, so sure.
Mm-hmm.
I had to give Dura up when I took them then.
Then we had to
give up David Jones to the paint company when I took them, and I had to give up Kelsey Wheel when I took them, and I had to have instrument panels from Ann Arbor. Had to give up instrument panel company.
Oh, that was King City.
King City,
right?
And I had to give up Goodyear. Uh-huh. At that time, I had V.F. Goodrich in order to take the Nash account. But that seemed
you had,
to be
you had a complete had a complete automotive component
absolutely
family there, didn't you?
For a long, long time.
Uh-huh. That's great.
And then I got to know all these top people of the suppliers,
mm-hmm.
which was a nice thing. put your hand on it and say, well, this guy's good, this guy's good. And you're not getting in trouble. You're doing the right thing because you know them, and they would do anything for you. And that's the way with
you knew the engineers and the person.
Yes, and it seemed like everybody's getting cemented together.
Mm-hmm.
To our, not just for us, but it just happened to be that way.
You had a little mini conglomerate there of automotive suppliers that you were directing.
That's right.
I can see where Nash would have been impressed.
They were, and it got to the point where. It happened later in years. Everything I did, mm-hmm. even to when I was president of the recess club,
uh-huh.
people were coming to me, calling me on the phone. I was very popular with all the vendors.
Uh-huh.
The top people would call me and say, George, we have a friend here that would like, even Harley one day called me and said,
really?
I'd like to get a fellow in the recess club. He said, if you don't mind, he said, would you put his name on top of the list if you can?
Uh-huh.
And I said, what's his name? He told me, and I said, no, Harley, I'll have to talk to you about that guy. He came up one day, and it's on a Saturday, and bossed all our people around. He wasn't even a member. And I said, it would be better not. Oh, he said, I didn't know that. He said, tell me, get the hell out of it. I said, I will. So he did. And then George Storer one day, of Storer Broadcasting Company.
Right, S-T-O-R-E-R.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He was down in Florida. He had a home in Indian Creek, and I was just starting in down Florida.
Mm-hmm.
We got acquainted there, and I joined the Indian Creek. I didn't join yet.
Mm-hmm.
He was in my office next door, and he came in my center building and said, his office was next door, he would like to get into the recess club.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, definitely, I'll take care of that right away. And I went over at the noon and put his name on top of the list.
Yeah.
That's all you had to do. It's just like anything else. He said, if you can do that, he said, I'll get you in the Indian Creek in Florida, which you wanted. That was a very fine club.
So was that Palm Beach?
That was in Miami Beach.
Oh, Miami Beach, yeah.
And right at that time, I became a governor, president of the one of the fine clubs down there.
Oh, great.
That's
well.
So anyhow, that's how with associations, mm-hmm. again. So everything that he did from then on, concerned me, and I concerned with myself with everything he did. So we got very well acquainted, and I got on the air a lot of times for him. That I wouldn't have done if I didn't know somebody like that.
And they gave you a break on advertising. And
So as I say, that just seems that everything started up. I got well known.
Mm-hmm.
I got well known from every little angle.
Mm-hmm.
And then one guy that when we were trying to get at the airport out down 8 Mile Road was a guy by the name Ernie Breach. Well, I didn't know Ernie Breach only by name,
mm-hmm.
and he was he was the opposition, and we tried both of them trying to get this airport out there.
Yes.
And so we did. We failed, but didn't get it out there. We're on the 8 Mile Road. But he remembered me from that. So
really?
one time, time and again,
mm-hmm.
When he wanted people in the recess club. Come to me and talk about
mm-hmm.
how we fought the against
battle.
Each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Ernie became a very close friend. He was my sponsor at Ford, and he got me the Ford account.
Mm-hmm.
I had the International Harvester account, which was a very big account.
Had Mr. Ornis gone to International Harvester?
Not then. He
not
was
then,
working
yeah.
for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was during the war, beginning of the war. I got the International Harvester account. General Barnes in Washington became a very good friend of mine, and had me be head of all the industrial design at the war of the Army. I'll show you some stuff on that.
Oh,
and
what was that? What was that?
On implementing jeeps, with turrets on the gun turrets,
uh-huh.
and getting moving vans to get them out and to put guns on top of them,
mm-hmm.
and then half tracks
right.
in the desert. They were laying all over our half tracks
mm-hmm.
without not enough supplies.
Right.
So it was our thing to circle all our half track companies,
uh-huh.
everything that they did. There again was my supplier effects. I called all the suppliers I could get all of them together, and I did this for the Army.
Uh-huh.
Then
was International Harvester involved in that?
Well, I was going to that. Yes, they were. And I got to know the International Harvester people very well. And then,
you'd have their account.
Then Raymond Loy did the work. Do you remember Raymond Loy?
Yes, L-O-E-W-Y.
Yeah, very good man, very good man. He did the logo for him. That's all he did. But
which one?
The I-H.
The I and the H? They still use it, don't they?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And one day at the Pentagon building, he had written a letter wanting to do their work.
Mm-hmm.
So General Campbell handed me the letter.
General Campbell?
Campbell.
Yeah.
And handed me the letter and said, here's a friend of yours, probably that you'd like to read the letter. He wants to do this account. He told me how much money he made, which was a lot more than ever the government was paying me. And read the letter, and I said, well, he said, you answer it. So I said, I'd read it.
Yeah.
So Raymond came up and had lunch with Campbell and all of the people.
Came up to Detroit?
Yeah, no, in Washington.
Oh, you're not in Washington this time?
The Pentagon.
Now, if you went to Washington to work for the government or for the Army...
As only a consultant.
As a consultant. Yeah. Okay, so you hadn't left your company.
No,
that's still intact.
Yeah, that's still
okay.
Intact. So Raymond was telling me he had in the pocket his all the things he'd done for International Harvester.
Uh-huh.
Big trucks, he said, I can do all this. He talked very Frenchy. He said, I can do all these trucks and so on, what I'm doing. They said, well, fine. They said, well, Mr. Walker is the man that you have to talk to.
Uh-huh.
Raymond Loy said, well, I said, I know George very well. He said, I'd like to talk to him. So
now, Mr. Loewy's career has sort of paralleled yours.
Well, as an industrial designer, and he had that one more automotive count that he did while he was on a boat coming back from Europe.
Really?
He made a sketch. It's like I used to do, just make sketch after sketch.
Uh-huh. And that's how he got it.
So I just explained to him. He said, all I'm doing is, I said, well, I fortunately, they after me too. I said, "International Officer." And after I get through with this, I'm going to take their account.
Uh-huh.
He says, "You can't, George. I've got that." And I said, "All right, that's fine." But I had it. I had the contract
really?
In my pocket.
You didn't know that.
You know.
Oh,
so later on the years, he said, "You certainly slipped one over on me." He said, well, anyhow, that's an old story.
That's a good story.
So yeah, it's a funny story.
It is too.
And I got to know them very well. But anyhow. This idea of surrounding a truck, where we would have out in the desert all our paraphernalia shot to pieces.
And they had
to stay there. Unless we found a way, we had a regular machine shop that we would put around there with the half tracks and with all the bearings companies and with all the pins and everything, that gasoline that they would implement this. Half truck, so get back in business again.
So we did
that for General Campbell, and that was publicized quite a bit.
So you were actually setting up a sophisticated repair?
That's what it was. That's exactly what it was.
Uh-huh.
And it worked out beautifully.
Uh-huh.
And through that, through all that, Baldwin Locomotive, I got to do things for them because we had to use them. See?
Uh-huh.
And we got to know them. And with the Goodyear, we got to know. Eddie Thomas, because Eddie Thomas worked with us very closely with the tire companies. So we had to tell them we couldn't handle it because we had Ford then.
You'd gotten Ford.
Well, we'd just gotten Ford.
How did that come about?
Well,
that's your first major automobile company.
That was because Ernie Breech wanted one day he came in the office and said. How would you like to have the Ford account? And I said, he just had gone with Ford. He's from General Motors.
46.
Yep, 46. So I said, I'd like it. I said, I'll show you all my stuff that I've been doing for Ford for years, but I didn't have the account.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things was that Jack Davis wanted me to make a presentation so he could show it to Mr. Ford.
Jack Davis was the sales
manager. So I made this big, great big heavy folder up of all drawings, what I could do for Ford, way past what they were doing.
And this was to be a presentation for the second.
Yeah, it had plastic, black and white, with the part that holds together white and black spiral thing. Uh-huh. Not on the shelf. This is the only part. And so he said, you sit here in my office and you can look through there and see what's going on, because Mr. Ford's going to come in there and see what your work is.
This is Henry Ford the second?
Yeah. No.
This is Henry Ford the first?
Yeah.
I'm
getting there. I got ahead of my story.
Okay.
And the old man opened the thing. It fell apart. It was too heavy. It went on the floor, and all my drawings that I paid $7,000 of my money for.
Oh.
He walked on it and walked right out of the room.
Now, what year was this, Mr. Walker?
That was in 46.
46?
Before 46. It was, yes.
Probably 45.
About 44, 45.
44.
Yeah. So.
This was for post-war?
Post-war stuff. Jack Davis said, never show anything like that to the old man. And he said, he doesn't like unfunctional things, so I learned a lesson. Well, getting back then, when young Henry's took over,
yes.
That was in 46.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when Breach said, we want you out here to take a look. He says, you know, you have Nash and International Harvester, and that's unethical to do it, but he says, don't tell me about it. I wanted you to do this for Mr. Ford, young Henry.
Right.
So would you come out and look at this car? And I looked at it and I said, geez, that's terrible. I said, you would go broke doing that. And Henry said, well, we're going to put that one out. I said, don't do that.
What were you looking at? Were you looking at the first proposal?
A Mercury that the designer at that time,
Bob Gregory.
Mm-hmm. That was the big old heavy thing. It was all out of shape.
Uh-huh.
It looked like the pregnant Buick of the years ago.
This is the post-war Mercury.
Post-war Mercury. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know Gregory had done that.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't make any difference. I didn't even know Gregory.
Yeah.
So I said, you couldn't put that on. He said, could you do any better? I said, I could do that better than my eyes closed.
Uh-huh.
He said, well, he said, you have got a job. I said, well, no, I haven't. I said, I got to unload Nash if they'll do it.
Yeah.
And I also got International Harvest, and they're two toughies.
Uh-huh.
So I each $75,000 apiece. And that was not for every hour that I spent, because I had made much more than that.
Right.
So, Breach said, call me on the phone. And that night, we were at Bloomfield Hills Country Club, where we used to be. And he said, well, did you just make up your mind what you want to do? He said, that's a great opportunity. He said, I can't tell you what's going to happen. He said, but you can make yourself millions of dollars for coming with us.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'll do it. I went to Mason. To Mason said, well, that's George, he did a great job for us, we're happy, but if that's going to benefit you, and it'll benefit us, he said, but you do for Ford.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the same way with International Arts, Fowler McCormick said the same thing. He said, well, you've done a great job for us. He said, we're pleased with this. So he said, we're not going to stop and hold you up. So you take the Ford account.
So he let you out of the contract?
Both kind.
Yeah, good.
Both of them.
Very nice.
And so that was the start of that.
So you're in 1945?
And then in 45, so in 46, we took to do a job for Ford,
mm-hmm.
for the post-war car.
Now tell me, if I may, if I can ask you to...
And he might know if I'd come out and talk to Henry.
Mm-hmm.
Henry just taken over the company, and his grandfather,
mm-hmm.
that I said, I'd like to meet him. I never met Henry.
Mm-hmm.
So I went out there right across from the rotunda,
mm-hmm.
and what was that, engineering department thing?
It was the headquarters.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
the administration building.
Yeah.
Right.
So they took me over and showed me the car that was supposed to be for the 1949 car,
mm-hmm.
which they were in so much trouble, they had to get out of it and get out of it quick.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to have a car that would be hurried to manufacture,
mm-hmm.
and to get dies and everything all set in 3 months' time. That was unheard of at the time. So Henry showed me the car. I said, "Why, that's terrible." I said, "You know, I was allowed to say it because I wasn't connected with it.
Right.
I would have anyhow."
Mm-hmm, of course.
And I said, "It just looks like me stooping over, and I was quite fat, and that's said before, but I said, you'd go broke and put this on the market. And they breached, turned to Henry and said, well, how could we take this car and make it a Mercury? I said, that's what you should do. Make it a Mercury and not a Ford, because it has no bearing with Ford. So he said, "Could you? What could you do to make this car a good selling car?" I said, well, that's my job. I'll research it to a point, and then I'll do the sketches, and I'll have, but you have to come down with your engineers and look at it every time we call. We won't overdo it. So they get Reed to do it. Benson, Henry, no Bill, Benson, Henry, and Youngren, and Breach, Bricker,
Meat Bricker,
and somebody else, Ben, Jack Davis.
Jack Davis.
They all came down. And
came down to your studio?
They liked our girl. It's Baldwin, pretty girl. So they kidded about standing out there instead of coming in with it. So they looked at our sketches all around the room and said, this looks good, this looks good, do this, and do that. I said, no, not that one, that doesn't look good, do this one. I said, we'll do this, a mock-up job. Just like that one's out there.
Right.
Eighth size. Then we'll do it a quarter size, and from quarter size, we'll do a full size. If you like it. If you don't like it, we'll have to start all over again. But I said, my way of thinking, don't ever put out that thing you got out there. Now, I didn't even know that Gregory did that. I didn't even know who Gregory was. So they said, that's fine, we'll do it. And then we'd sit down with the terms. What we would pay you, what you would do, and they, I said, that's ridiculous. I said, I get $75,000 for each one of them, Ford, and $75,000 from International Services. Why should I pay, give you my service for $100,000?
What'd they
say? Said, don't worry about that. We take care of it. Don't worry about that. And I said, hell, you're telling me to give up two accounts, and you tell me not to worry about it. You're not going to worry. I'm going to sleep nights. So, then that, I mentioned him the other, a couple of nights afterwards while we were eating dinner at Bloomfield's, and Ernie and his wife were there. And he asked me to come over to his table. He said, yes.
You want something to know?
Reach at the, you met Ernie Breach at the Bloomfield Hills Country.
Yep.
Right.
And he mentioned the fact about the money. And he said, oh, I didn't specify in front of Henry, he said, what we could do for you. But he said, you're going to find out for a 5-year program that we can make you $5 million. I said, well, they did, as through stocks. And they didn't tell me they were up for stock out, it wasn't out then. So I said, well, then I have something to go to Mr. Nash, Mr. Mason, and Mr.
Fowler McCormick. Fowler McCormick, yes, from
the National Army. So I said, now I got something to go for. Talk to him about it. I said that I couldn't divorce myself from them, and I said our program's pretty well at hand, so I can go and save jeopardy. I wouldn't jeopardize anything they had.
Right.
So, and he told me the story. So I said, well, I'll do it. And I said, but you've got to come down every time I call and review it, because we won't have time. We're going on deadline. So we hurried and got everything, our whole organization, 27 of our staff.
This is the George Walker Associates in the
New Center Building. Then we got to the point where we made the showing, and they came down for the showing, after it was in trade size, and they said, that's it.
You had a 3/8 or
an 8 size.
8 size.
Then we got into the quarter size after that. Then they shaped it up a little bit better, then the full size. The full size we did out there at the plant, in the engineering department. And it was supposed to be guard there all morning and the night. A guard for every hour of the day. Nobody could enter into it, and we saw to it that they didn't, to a point. But we didn't know that Youngren and Talberg was going to take Gregory and Johnny Najar too. He never acknowledged that, but we heard later it was. Johnny told somebody else that. I never liked that, but because Johnny was very true to us, you know. Very good boy.
Yes.
We tried our best to forget about it. That's what we did.
Yeah. Well, he probably was told to do it by Youngren.
Yeah, he was. So they tried to do pictures of mine, what we had. Because we had them on all set for them, but it looked like a bathtub. It looks just like the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So they, when they found out how ours was and the company was leading towards it,
mm-hmm.
that's when they wanted the green. That was another thing. Greenish blue.
Mm-hmm.
Gregory's was greenish blue.
Yeah.
I didn't know that about Gregory's.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, this is going to be yellowish tan.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Mr. Ford doesn't like that. I said, this is not his car. It's my car.
Uh-huh.
Until he buys it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right.
Again, I was off base for saying that, but Breeze told me that later. He said, you have all fucking guts. He said, that's you know, you could have been fired before you were hired. I said, yeah, I know that. I had the satisfaction of saying that. Anyhow. So, we painted that color,
mm-hmm.
which is something like this out there. That,
yes.
Beige-ish, but beige with a lot of white in it, and nearly a bright yellow. So the car looked so nice, and all glassed and sprayed and hardware. And when they saw they all 100% okayed it, even Youngren.
Really?
Yep.
Now, who was in attendance there?
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Jeff.
You were. Who was with you at this meeting?
Bricker.
Meet Bricker.
Jack Davis.
Mm-hmm. Harold Youngren.
Harold Youngren. Somebody else, I'm just trying to think who it was. Benson Ford. And Henry.
Mm-hmm.
Bridge. I think that's about all.
Yeah, good group.
Yep. They all came down.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at the sketches and said, well, that's fine. And they looked at the finished quarter size.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Said, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how long it's going to take to do it. Okay, I told the young one to get pave the way, get that walker's hands, guide the guards around her, nobody's to see it, absolutely nobody's to see it.
Uh-huh.
Until they got full size. And then when they got full size, they had another meeting
mm-hmm.
for a final okay with the same board.
Mm-hmm.
Same board.
Mm-hmm.
And they all went in there, and I wasn't allowed in there. They all walked around the car, and first of all, they showed it to the old man, Mr. Hartford.
Yes.
And he took the handle, and it was only stuck in clay, and he threw it on the ground, and said, that doesn't work. Then the board came in
mm-hmm.
and okayed it.
And that was the 49 Ford?
That 49 Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Then we started to make all drawings and full-size sketches.
Very good.
Very good.
Yep. So that was in 1946?
1946.
And did you finalize the design right there?
Yep. Yeah, we did.
I wonder if I could take you back to...
There were a few little details.
Yes.
Of course, that would be ironed out in any kind of a car.
Right. Mm-hmm. Tell me about stories I've heard. Joe Horace talks about the spinner front end that he worked on. Khalil?
Yep.
Dick Khalil. He's still in Detroit.
He is.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Khalil tells about the story about asking Holden Bob Cotto to come out and help him with the clay model, the original clay model. Do you know any details about that?
I don't remember Bob, but I know Bob Cotto.
Uh-huh. He's down in Boynton Beach.
Dick, yeah, yes. Yeah. Dick, we hired Dick. Didn't have a job.
Mm-hmm.
We hired Dick, and it was kind of a nuisance. He'd come in the office, clay all over his feet, and want to talk all the time, how good he was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was one of the things some of these guys do. But then he started telling around how he designed it.
Right.
But he didn't.
No.
Joe and Elwood really went
pretty
to
much
work.
The one.
And Cotto, that's right, Cotto worked with him, but not Clay, but not Dick.
Yeah.
I took Dick then and paid him 3 months doing nothing but sitting around, because he did work.
Mm-hmm.
And then I called Tex Colbert and told Tex, which I knew very well,
mm-hmm.
I said, Tex, you said if any of our people wanted to get connected, you'd come over and talk to them, or you'd have them out and talk to them. So I said, there's one guy here, Dick Cleo. He did a little bit of our clay modeling.
Yeah.
I didn't say anything else, because he didn't.
Uh-huh.
Same outlook. So he sent him out here, and I sent him out there, and he got him a job. He gave him a very good job at Chrysler. And then Dick was very grateful, but he did the same thing. When he got out there, he was trying to dictate everything he wanted to. He said he and Raymond Loy, when they worked Studebaker and Cotto, and they did this, that. He would be talking that all the time. See, he'd be getting so boring. But we still liked old Dick.
Yes, he's still
Elmer didn't, and Joe didn't. They couldn't stand him. But they did that.
Uh-huh.
But he had nothing to do with the front end.
Yeah.
Not a thing, neither of them. But Joe did, and that was Joe's spinner type.
Yes.
And another thing, we had the sketches all over the room on spinners alone at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Just spinners alone, not the front ends. And the spinner type I liked.
Mm-hmm, right.
Breach liked that.
Yes.
He came down one day to, just for the front of the show. And who was the guy that had a lot of cars? He was a great singer.
Melton.
James
Melton. Yeah,
James Melton.
Yeah.
And we had a show, and they brought James Melton. And I told him, I said, they're looking for front ends, but I like that one. That's a spinner.
Uh-huh. Right.
So that was a...
And that was Joe Orris's.
Yeah. Pretty soon, they were looking at Henry looking at this, and then Jim Melton said, hey, I like this. This is good.
Henry said, I like it too.
Yeah, I like it.